It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are joined by Google's own Matt Cutts. We'll talk about why you need a body, not just a head. The latest with Google Now and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 248, recorded May 7th, 2014, Google Prey. This Week in Google is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter for a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/twig. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG to receive $10 off at checkout. And by 99designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 295,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/twig to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the cloud, Facebook, Twitter, and all that jazz, with Gina Trapani, founding editor at Lifehacker, currently a principal at ThinkUp, the fabulous Twitter and Facebook analytics company at thinkup.com. And a blogger at smarterware.org. And she's probably forgot the address as well.
So sad.
You're busy.
Whatever happened to blogs, yeah.
She's got a baby. She's got a new program. There he is, Jeff Jarvis. He's in Seattle today to meet with some big wigs.
At the Gates Foundation.
Ooh, the there it is. Beautiful.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's pretty. And what are you doing? Jeff's a professor of journalism at City University of New York. He also blogs at BuzzMachine.com. What are you doing at the Gates Foundation?
They have a meeting of all their media fundees, so I'm going to stand up and say I'm not a fundee yet. My favorite moment, Gina moment this week, I'm just going to throw this in, is that somebody speculated that there are new regulations about, in Russia, I guess it was, about not using nasty words and how I couldn't live in Russia. Gina looked up her data on ThinkUp and said that I didn't use the F word as much as she thought.
Yeah, we have a new insight in ThinkUp that tells you how often you drop the F-bomb on Twitter or Facebook. And, it doesn't show up for everybody. It only shows up for folks who do that at all. And, of course, Jeff had that insight, and it wasn't so bad. It was only like 8 times in a month.
Well, now I'm embarrassing. Now I got to oomph up my F and act here.
I'm gonna have to use F once so I can just see.
Yeah,
because I don't think I've ever used the F word in any of my tweets.
So. I haven't either, honestly, because it's just personal policy. But that's not the case for everybody, and we just thought, hey, why not celebrate it?
If somebody uses this a lot, do you like have a red insight? You know, bright red.
We're not judgmental. We merely count. And we'll let you know how many more this month as compared to last month once we have the data to show you that.
I love ThinkUp.
You call it Jeff Insight? That's my.
Look at that! It's Matt Cutts from the Google. He's one of the early employees at Google. Currently fights spam in Google search results. He does those wonderful webmaster videos too. Matt's nice to see you from the Googleplex.
Good to be back. Thanks very much for having me.
I got a question for Matt. Actually, I mentioned this before, but I never had the guy here. I've been getting a lot of email. You guys must be on a campaign to get rid of bad backlinks, because I've been getting email all of a sudden from people who spammed our forums many moons ago, saying, you know, I don't know who did that. could you delete all those spammy links or spammy accounts? And then a few of them are really mean and say, I would hate to have to report you to Google for not doing so.
Yeah, that's a nice forum you got there. Yeah. You're shame if something happened to it. Yeah.
So should I worry, Matt?
No. No, no, you don't need to worry. This is basically a one-time correction where for a long time spammers were like, get links, all the links, as many links as you can get, links, everything. And now that's not the case. And in fact, it makes sense to not have some of those low-quality links. So this is basically a lot of people trying to go back and clean up the mess they've made. The nice news is going forward, people will be, or at least anyone who pays attention will be smart enough not to just say, yes, get as many links as possible. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
But no, you don't need to worry about it. You're in fine shape.
It gives me great pleasure to often respond to them saying, with a little bit of schadenfreude, oh, you spammed my forum and now you wish you hadn't. Mm-hmm. But somebody pointed out to me, and I think this is possibly the case, that some of these might be legitimate firms that hired less than legitimate SEO firms and they did it on their behalf.
Yeah, so that does happen.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what people always say.
Right.
We're
actually going to shut down those forums because they're not much used. And I just think it's probably better. Forums are kind of old hat.
Yeah.
There is discourse. That's actually a new one from Jeff Atwood and company, and it actually does a very good job of being crawlable, and it includes some user trust, so that you can't just drop a link the day that you register. So you might want to check out.
I am now suddenly interested. Discourse.org.
Is there? It's an open source, right? You download and install yourself, right? Is there like a very popular Discourse installation?
That's a good question. All I know is, you know, since we're interested in spammed forums, we did a little bit of an audit to make sure that, you know, that it was crawlable and had pretty good SEO. And it was actually looking really good. It's one of the very few times I was like, there's not a lot more to suggest. So if you just want to drop in forum that is sort of like the next generation of forum, I'd sort of start looking there rather than with some of the older ones that...
I am going to talk to our team because I like the idea of a forum. And, you know, there are forums like... The XDA Developers Forum for Android that are very active and very widely used, AVS Forum. There are some kind of, they've become kind of platforms. I think a forum is a nice way for our audience to get interactive. So maybe I should take a look at this Discourse.
I should notice, Leo. Oh, there is a subreddit for Twit on Reddit.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Many subreddits. I think each of our shows has a subreddit. And, you know, we just launched a Reddit show called Reddit Up.
Right.
Because I love Reddit.
New stuff coming out. I can talk about later, by the way.
Yeah.
I talked to them.
So they will do a hosted version. They haven't done it yet, but they're working on a hosted version. But we have a few servers lying around.
Yeah, and the sandbox looks great. Just the, you know, front page.
Yeah.
Just, you know, try it out.
Yeah.
Very good discourse.
Well, one thing they do, which I really like, you don't have to go page, next page, next page, next to read a discussion. You can just look at it, which is great.
Yeah.
We used something briefly that was very popular called Vanilla. Remember Vanilla forums? They were really clean and simple.
Oh, yeah.
Loved those. But we ended up using some, you know, PHP BB tile thing that really is just, it makes me nervous. That even is on our servers.
Yeah, there are entire server packages you can lease out of Russia for $500 a month where they will register accounts, solve the CAPTCHA, you know, just, you know, professional software packages to spam every type of forum.
Oh, so it's horrible.
It's pretty crazy.
Have you ever
been to Russia, Matt?
Have you
ever gone to face the enemy?
My wife would like to go, and I'm kind of like, I'm not sure I want to go to Russia.
Really? You think, no, you'd be safe there, wouldn't you?
I'm sure, but...
He's lowering the GDP of Russia.
Here's a picture of Vladimir Putin considering the arrival of Matt Cutts in the Soviet, former Soviet Union.
I am not amused.
Well, and there's these new blogger laws that Putin signed where bloggers have to register. Yeah, pretty wild.
And he'll use ThinkUp to find out who's using the F word and banish them.
Putin on Monday, actually a few weeks ago, said that the internet was a special CIA project.
That guy.
Like, you know. This is a lot of governments. China very famously does this. You have to register if you want to publish on the internet. That's really sad.
It really is sad. It's the ruination. The Times story goes through kind of the state of things of how all the countries that are trying to mess up.
Turkey, China. Of course, during the Arab Spring of a couple of years ago, Egypt, Syria, Venezuela, during protests against the government in February, was blocking online images from users. Right. Pakistan has banned 20 to 40,000 websites, including YouTube, saying they're offensive to Muslims. Facebook blocked for a while. Yeah, that to me, that is a measure of how powerful and good the internet is as a as a force for democracy, for you know, freedom.
Yeah.
When the tyrants don't like something, that's a good sign.
Yeah, that is a good sign.
You might hope ThinkUp gets banned there as well.
That's my goal.
It counts Fs. What a terrible thing to do.
It used to be, if you were an author, what you really wanted is the Catholic Church to ban your book. Yes. That would sell copies, baby.
It boosts sales.
Yeah. Let's see. Should we talk about Classroom a little bit?
Yeah, that looks neat.
Launched yesterday. They announced it at an event some time ago. It's the apps for education tool to help teachers create and collect assignments.
My fellow faculty members immediately were sending an email around saying, we want this.
Is it a Blackboard replacement, a Moodle replacement? What exactly
I don't know.
Does it do? You can create and collect assignments. Classroom weaves together Google Docs. See, you've already got Docs, right? You've got
Drive. You've got Gmail. There's a lot of other people use. And Blackboard is universally despised.
Everybody uses, not only expensive, but everybody uses it, hates it. We use Moodle at the local high school that I'm a part of. That's an open source project, but that is ugly, a little hard to use. And we also use Google Docs. So I think anything that works with Google Docs would be very powerful.
This is an evil conspiracy to get young people onto Google.
It is the CIA, you know.
And it sounds like it'll, if you have a lot of assignments, it'll create folders in Google Drive for, like, here's the class period and here's individual students. So, what are we doing with paper in 2014? You know, just even bringing that all in one place is a large amount of progress.
So. It's kind of funny. Lisa's son, Michael, is 11. He's in fifth grade. He has to do his first research project. And one of the first things is get the insight. He's doing it on cactuses. Get the encyclopedia entry for cactus. And it's like, fortunately, back when my kids were that young, I bought a World Book Encyclopedia in 1995. And I still have it because it's beautiful. It's a
Did you move
it? I just moved it to my office this week so that Michael could get the cactus, the C volume. And then for a while, we subscribed to the yearbook because, of course, it's immediately out of date. So now you have to subscribe to a yearly update of what happened in 1996, 97, 98, 99. And then it just stops at 1999. It's the last one I got. And there's so I'm considering an artifact from the previous century.
It's the Y2K problem of knowledge.
It's just nothing happened after 1999.
The end of history.
End of history. It's beautiful. I got the deluxe edition. It's leather bound. It's gold pages. It's got a little ribbon. I don't know what I was thinking. I was nuts.
Oh, man.
It was very expensive.
A good dad.
But you know what? I'm glad I have it now because it is. It's kind of a little bit of you know what it was? Is because when I was a kid in 1965, I read the encyclopedia. I loved it. I would just take a volume at random. I liked the S volume because it was the biggest. And I would just read it. And I thought
I taught myself the sign language, the alphabet in sign language using like Encyclopedia Britannica, blue. Yeah. When I was like 9, I'm just imagining that my daughter is going to be like, Mama, like, what was an encyclopedia? Yeah. I'm waiting for that.
Yeah. So I had it here at the office and I had everybody. I said, can you help me, guys? And and Russell said, what did you print out Wikipedia? Times has changed. So this classroom is...
You know, the Germans did print out Wikipedia.
What? What for?
One of the publishers there did an edited, amended version of Wikipedia called the Wikipedia Lexicon on this very thick book.
Wow. Here's the Encyclopedia Britannica entry for cactus. Well, look at that.
Do they charge you to get to it?
They do. This is just a locked sample.
Oh, to continue learning, pay here.
Well, and look, it's got an ad next to it for Vonage, TripIt.
Wow.
Activate your free trial. Members get more. Merrill Lynch. This is sad. This is not the encyclopedia. And on Google, right at the top there.
Yeah, like, don't be using this. Be using Google.
An ad for Google Ads. Wow. Yeah, it's I love books, but I think books are a specialty product now, aren't they?
Yes.
Nothing wrong with it.
It was a wonderful column by Will Self in The Guardian about the this week about the end of the literary novel, and it's just magnificently overwritten.
Oh, I hope that literary novel is not dead.
Oh, he argues it is. Because he argues that basically you have to get buried in a narrative, and readers will not give up the link, and the link will break the narrative.
Oh, that's so sad.
And he didn't say it really mournfully. He just said this is reality.
This is going to come as a great shock to Jonathan Franzen.
Oh, well, yeah, let me tell you. So I had his book, Corrections, I guess, the one before last.
Yeah, that was a great book.
Well,
you talk about a lot of work.
I was trying to get through it.
Yeah.
That's why I was reading it. And then it was in my briefcase on 9/11.
Wow.
And the book got completely infused with all the dust. Absolutely every page was thick.
Oh, that was the Corrections.
Corrections, yeah. Right. So I threw it out, and then I bought it again.
Wow.
And I couldn't read it anymore. It just seemed self-indulgent to me. And fiction has since.
Oh. Hmm. Wow. So it's not the link, it's 9/11 that killed the book for you.
For me. And I also think that he's a little bit self-indulgent, too. I loved his book, The 27th City. I'm still in the blurb on the cover from People magazine.
Well, interesting, because when I do a search for Jonathan Franzen, I get the Google Books page for the Corrections. Look at that.
I was talking to a friend of mine about like iPad magazines or tablet magazines and the difference between reading web pages. Like I use Instapaper to save stuff to read later. And if I'm on the subway and I'm offline and I start looking at my Instapaper queue, I have this hyperlink anxiety because there are often links that I want to follow I can't because I'm offline. And so what I like about books and magazines is that they are contained, right? And like it's up to the author to provide all the context in the words in front of me versus just, you know, kind of linking off and letting me decide. I mean, of course I read like that all day, but what's nice about the book and the magazine and sort of the contained story is that I don't have hyperlink anxiety and I can't go off into a million directions. I'm just giving myself over to the author to take me from point A to point B and give me all the information that I need in that straight line. And I think that there's value in both ways of reading.
I don't think sci-fi is going away. I feel like at least among the most technically literate folks, people who watch our shows and so forth, we all love sci-fi. We love getting buried in a sci-fi novel.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And
fiction's not going away.
The literary novel.
Literary novel.
The sci-fi is not literary.
Who was it I was with the other day? Whoever bought Harlequin. Oh, it was News Corp. Bought Harlequin. I was with an executive from News Corp. And the number of romance novels, if you want to call it fiction of any sort, is just incredible. Hundreds of them a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So people like to read fiction.
Just not literary fiction.
Smart.
Highfalutin fiction. Yeah. So I would say that that isn't link anxiety, because why don't you have link anxiety if you read a Harlequin? I mean, link anxiety is link anxiety. It's just that people don't have time for highfalutin literature.
Well, part of the argument is are people willing to do something hard?
Oh, no, definitely not.
I think that's...
Definitely not. Too much work.
Well, it's funny because, I save stuff to read offline when it's, you know, TLDR because it's during my work day, right? Like, I can't – it's not a piece of content I can ingest quickly, you know, while I'm at my computer doing other things. So it's true that a novel is a much larger
– Nobody has
time
anymore.
A novel to me is it's an escape. It's a vacation. You know, versus sort of news gathering or reading, you know, reading quick essays.
He has one of the best leads I've ever read. Let me see if I can do this. And I'll send you to your, if you happen to be a writer, one of the great benessons, look it up.
Yeah.
Boy, of having children.
Go. Yeah.
Is that your personal culture mind is equipped with its own canaries.
Holy cow. Wait a minute. I got to parse that.
You have to be a writer. One of the great benefits of having children is that your personal culture mind is equipped with its own canaries.
Yes, because you've read so many books.
On relentlessly into the future, these little harbingers either choke on the noxious gases released by the extraction of decadence, or they thrive in the clean air of what we might call progress. Isn't that great?
Wow. That's beautifully written.
Yeah, it's a great piece.
But you know what? Nobody's this is nothing new. Nobody reads literature.
No, it's been lamented.
Well, it's always like, been the 1% that have ever read literature. Come on.
Just as Twitter is declared dead every once a year, so are literary.
No, Twitter's actually dead.
No.
Didn't you get the memo, Jeff? I don't know.
It actually no. Well, the stock market.
Price.
Yeah, the stock market thinks
it's
dead.
How you measure its life.
Why? So yeah, what is what's going on? The stock market apparently doesn't believe that Twitter is going to. They believe because of its falling growth.
Well, growth was down A, but B, then a whole bunch of insider shares were released. I think yesterday or day before.
They were unlocked.
Yeah, they're unlocked. So that caused
a lot of big sell off. Mm-hmm. But the shares were dropping long before a week before that. So it's just. I think it's an adjustment. I think Twitter was perhaps overhyped because, gosh, you couldn't go 5 minutes without a TV show or a magazine or anything or billboard saying hashtag something or other. And so everybody thought, oh, this is mainstream. I don't know if it's mainstream. Well, here's
it's
Jimmy.
Still pretty darn big.
Here's Jimmy Fallon. He does this. And by the way, Jimmy Fallon, the new Tonight Show, uses Twitter, I think, to great effect. He plays a game called the hashtag game. Let's play that. So he just sent this out. Let's play the hashtag game. Tweet out a funny, weird, or embarrassing thing your mom has said and tag this with mom quotes. And so then what happens is now tomorrow night, the next night, he'll read mom quotes. They had a funny one. The last one I saw was a rap. It was a Kentucky Derby. It was because it was on the Kentucky Derby day, May 2nd. Kentucky Derby rap. It was hysterical. And then they had the Roots, his wonderful house band, rap it. I don't know what they're going to do with mom quotes. Maybe get Jimmy's mom to read them. They're good. They do a good job with these, I think. And so, I think that there's lots of ways Twitter can continue on.
Yeah.
And monetize. Yeah. But maybe it was overhyped. Or maybe the stock market doesn't know diddly do. Yes.
The story about Loon, Google Loon.
All right.
Not doing its own thing, but now instead.
They're going to
leasing
their balloons to the telcos.
I was depressed by that because I was hoping that Google could provide Uber Earth competition to those said phone companies.
A lot of this comes from. Astro Teller. What a great name. Do you know Astro, Matt?
A little bit. Yeah,
God, what a great name.
Really good guy. Yeah.
He is the head of Google X, the Google Moonshots, and Loon is one of the Moonshots. And I guess he was speaking at TechCrunch Disrupt about Google X.
Well, and there's a lot of interesting parts in here. Now, bear in mind that I don't, have any idea what the Loon folks are actually, pursuing, on a day-to-day basis, but it might make sense. If you can cooperate with some telcos, then you can test out the system, see how it works, work on the navigation of the balloons, see how long you can hover over a given place or a country or something like that. And if you've got 7 problems to solve and working with someone takes one of those problems off so that you can move a little faster, I think that sounds great. And then if down the road someone magically, all the FCCs of the world agree on a one communication spectrum that's open that everybody could use, then you could still explore that down the road. But just to my uneducated eyes, not knowing anything inside details, it seems like it's a good way to jumpstart and move a little bit faster.
So it's not like they want to give Loon to the telcos. It's just that, for Loon to work, Loon is stratospheric balloons. They're almost in space. They're above even the weather that you bounce internet access off of to provide internet access to places you can't get wires to. You got to have the internet access coming from somewhere. It's going to, yeah. I mean, unless Google wants to build base stations all over the globe, it doesn't make sense to use telcos and others who have the access to provide the connection. And certainly for testing. I don't think that means anything. Don't be all depressed, right, Jeff.
Okay,
it's okay.
I'm not depressed now. I'm happy now.
It's part of the process.
I have the Matt Cutts balm on my anxiety.
Well,
and it doesn't seem like they could reverse at any time, right? They could decide to solve that problem themselves.
Well, and
the
here's
future.
The good news. He also said that they are not going to do jetpacks.
that was disappointing.
Yeah, well, they considered it, but it was louder than having a Harley motorcycle on your back. And that didn't seem like a good experience.
You know the story to be done. People with Google jetpacks are going to fly over your backyard. they're going to see everything you see. It's a privacy violation.
Yeah. Mm. I think it's that you're going to crash into the Amazon drones, and it's going to be a nightmare. Falling, burning death, falling from the sky.
So, Jeff, just back to Loon for 1 second. I'll give you one more piece of balm that make you feel better. If they're actually working and talking to telcos and talking about cooperating with them, to me that says, hey, Loon is still a very high priority. People are exploring it. They're seeing how far they can go. It's much more of a concrete thing than let's see if we can get 100 balloons to stay afloat for so long. So I take that as a good sign in that direction as well.
There's also a really good quote in here. Apparently, we thought, this is a quote from Master, we thought it was going to be an app, we thought working with existing telcos and use their spectrum, buying harmonized spectrum was going to be absolutely critical to the project. And we wanted to get it done before we launched. They had worked for half a year to get the spectrum deal done and worked with a number of large companies, to make it work. Larry Page told the team, I love this quote, you're going to hit a double. That's not really interesting. You're going to be really frustrated. You're going to be really angry for a week, but then you'll get creative and you'll come up with a home run. That's kind of an inspirational thing to say. I love that.
Yeah.
And Teller does say, indeed, for a week afterwards, the team was angry and came up with something way better than just buying a small piece of harmonized spectrum. Now they use a spectrum that's already exists in a given country. So that's why you have to work with a telco. But it's interesting because you'll only get the balloon while it passes over. They don't stay still. So it'll be, as the balloon's passing over, you got it for however long it's in the right above you in your airspace, and then it moves on.
Well, I thought there was a mesh of them so that you would.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, the idea is you have enough balloons afloat at any given time with some spacing between them such that you can do the handoff just like if you were in a car doing the handoff between cell phone towers or something.
And
like
they
that.
Get more bandwidth that way, too, because these guys have more bandwidth than Google could have gotten. But right
What's
now,
the latency like on these things, have they said?
Well, the latency, you know, the main thing to know is the latency going 12 miles is so much better than going up to an actual satellite like, you know, DirecTV or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, it remains to be seen how much you can squeeze out engineering-wise. But the nice thing is you're only going like 60,000 feet or something like that and not, you know, thousands and thousands of miles up. So
right.
We shouldn't do this to you, Matt. Because I know you come on here as a private citizen. You do not represent and speak for Google, but I got to ask you. Mm-hmm. Google Plus, is it going to stick around?
Oh, I thought there was a really good article about how, you know, Google Plus, in a lot of ways, was about trying to get identity situated and you know, for a long time, you could come to Google, you could search, and we didn't know who you were, anything like that. Only really with Gmail did we start to realize, you know what, it might be handy to understand who users are so that they can, like, log in and stuff. And so we were always sort of behind. We never had, you know, think about YouTube, bought in 2006 and had a completely different identity system. So I think what a lot of people overlook is one of the biggest strengths of Google Plus, in my mind, is it's caused Google to bring identity all under the same umbrella so that, you know, things are somewhat, you know, logical rather than just, okay, here's a silo out here in the wilderness that doesn't have any connection to Google whatsoever. And I think it's been a huge success in that realm. And I think Google needed to work on that. And now I think we can sort of take a look around and figure out, okay, what's the next big thing that we need from Google Plus? Do we, you know, look at the web? Do we push within Google to make identity more strengthened? And I have no idea. I don't really know what the plan is from that point of view. But, you know, I love Google Plus. I use it a lot, especially internally. There's a really thriving discussion on our Google internet and intranet. And so I hope that they, you know, keep it around and it's healthy for years and years to come.
Good. No, we feel the same, exactly the same way.
Absolutely.
And I don't look for Google Plus to become the mass culture hit that Twitter is. That's one of the things that makes Twitter unpleasant.
But it's already bigger than Twitter in the people in the
Isn't that funny, huh?
Well, and I think, I mean, here we are using Hangouts to do our radio show, right? And you know, think about photos. So just getting identity right for those kinds of things is already much further than Google was before Google Plus.
Right.
Yes. That's a really good point, Matt. If you did kind of an audit of what Google Plus has added and this notion of identity across services has added. And it really, we had a conversation last week about you know, Facebook breaking up the app. And Leo, you said that the brilliance of Google is that it's n number of different services and applications, but what ties the platform it's really built on is, our data. But that's so it can serve us better.
Yeah, and even little things, just like the authorship and on web pages and search results, is such a big thing. And even just, I mean, even Google now, as much as sometimes it does creep me out how telepathic it is. You know, the fact that I'm signed in across my devices and Google now knows that I want to catch the new episode of, you know, The Good Wife. You know, and now I know that. I mean, I just the services are so smart now, and that's because I'm signing in because I've created contacts because I've, you know, my content is travels across products. And Google Plus is really the glue.
But we're the true believers. Doesn't that scare the hell out of everybody else? Isn't that exactly?
It does.
Isn't that what people are worried about?
Yeah.
I love it. And in fact, we had this discussion on Sunday on Twit. So this is good, isn't it? What is the nightmare scenario you're worried about? That the ads will be targeted?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You have to do the Punch the Monkey ads, go back to 1999.
Yeah, you want to go back to those days? That's right. Belly fat ads. I don't need any belly fat ads. I am perfect.
did you see the article about the woman who conceived? She was pregnant, and she decided that she didn't want to be tracked after she read that the New York Times article about how Target knew that this girl was pregnant before she had told, you know, her family. And I think it was Janet Vertese was the woman who decided that she was going to be under the radar about her pregnancy the entire time. She used
The irony is she quit Google as a, quote, conscientious objector, but uses Facebook.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I read that article, and it sounded like she had quit. She said, I got off Google 2 years ago when they changed their privacy policies. So this is what really kind of surprises me. I'll say surprises because – you know, Google had 60 plus different privacy policies, and that it doesn't make sense to have a whole bunch of silos. And putting it towards one unified privacy policy is exactly what Apple and Facebook and a huge number of all these other companies do. Like, it's really correcting a historical artifact. And you know, to object to that and say, okay, Google, by
oh
doing
my
now,
God,
every
they unified
other company
their...
does.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
So for me, like Google Now and all these things are hugely helpful. And I understand if people don't want to use them or if they want to disable them, and we should provide that functionality. But for me, if the trigger is Google unified its privacy policies, well, I would rather have one to pay attention to than to have 60 different ones, you know, one for this product and one for Google Flight Search. And
there's an unstated presumption in this article that they don't even have to examine this notion that whatever it is they're collecting this data for, it's bad. So they don't even have to examine that.
Which means that knowledge now becomes bad. It means that, that having a personal relationship with us becomes bad. And I yell at media companies for saying we don't know relationships, we don't know who we serve, we treat everybody as a mass. That's inherently insulting. We have to start to know people as individuals. But if this privacy nuttiness goes too far, then that'll be seen as a bad thing.
This is from an article in Think Progress. They said, you said you quit Google products 2 years ago. What was the breaking point? She said, when Google knew I was engaged before anybody else, that did it for me. What? How did that happen? Well, Google reads your emails, reads your chats. It knows what you're searching for. It sees we when you're sleeping and knows when you're awake. And the server is economically incentivized to remember. So what happened? She sent an email to somebody using the word engaged, and she saw an engagement ring ad or something.
That's my guess. That's my guess. Yeah.
And that so there's this anthropomorphization that's going on. And
exactly.
I admit that even among our sophisticated audience, and I would say everybody who watches this show and listens to Twit is among the most sophisticated users, there is very much this feeling that, well, they're reading my email.
Well,
and I think that makes people who have something that they want to hide uncomfortable. And there's like legitimate times when there is something that you want to hide. If you don't want people to know that you're pregnant, I lived with a big secret before I came out of the closet that was really scary, and I lived in constant fear of other people knowing. So if Google Now was selling me two bride cake toppers before I came out of the closet, that would have freaked me out.
Yeah, except it wouldn't have been meaningful because no human knew it. It's just that there was correlation between a keyword and an ad.
The Google products, I mean, good products, good digital products, it kind of anthropomorphize themselves,
that's
right?
True.
There's a friendly voice.
That's a good point.
I'm empathetic to both sides here. Like, I really see both sides here, and I'm split on this a lot. And I'm trying to offer the other side of the coin.
No,
Let me ask you all a question. I'm coming out, I think I mentioned last week, to speak to the Google privacy group, about 300 people in 2 weeks. And what I want to say at first is that I think Google has to have the absolute best practices there are. And then I want to say in the second half, we've got to open up, we've got to change this discussion from having vaults to having marketplaces to open our stuff up. But let's stay with the first half. What would you define as best practices? What should Google do to bring trust and faith and recognize the value of doing these things? Well, that opened up a big conversation.
Let me make it more specific.
Okay.
Would it be enough for you if Google said, well, look, we're never going to out you to a real person or an organization or in any meaningful way. All that will happen is if we will match a keyword in your email to advertising, but that in no way outs you. And we promise never to give that information to anybody who can
except
use it.
Except to the NSA and the FBI when they come with a
warrant. There's going to be a fudge words because except for governmental.
I'll throw out a couple, you know, quick ones, which are, you know, I think there ought to be encryption. And it ought to be ubiquitous between you and whoever you're talking to so that someone can't spy in the middle. We ought to offer options like incognito mode all over the place so that people who want to opt out or if they're doing a sensitive search.
But wouldn't that undermine your business model?
Well, no, that's the thing. I think if you have an option where you know, hey, you're doing something private, you can go incognito, then anyone who is savvy enough to care can go and find that out and use that. But if people, the vast majority of people, you know, there have been studies that say they'll tell you their password for a chocolate bar. You know, if most people don't care, then there's definite value that can be given to the average person like Google Now.
Well, there was a rumor that Gmail might countenance end-to-end encryption. I mean, that you could implement that beautifully.
Right. I think that would be fantastic. And in fact, Gmail tries by default to encrypt mail between Gmail and other providers.
Right.
So think like that, or make it easier to do PGP and encryption, and then a dashboard that shows you what you know and gives you the options to delete it. I think all those things are really good things.
And you think Google might consider even doing that, given that it costs money, in effect? It says we're going to give up that opportunity to monetize.
Trust can be a real competitive advantage.
Right, absolutely. And what I would argue is we actually do relatively good on things like we were some of the first to do encryption. We offered incognito mode, I think, before maybe even IE released private browsing. You know, there is a dashboard where you can look at your search history and all sorts of different stuff about you. But no matter what, it's interesting that Google gets raked over the coals for things like people say, oh, you're in bed with the NSA. Like, you know, this Al Jazeera article just came out that said, oh, Google is doing some special thing with the NSA. And then you read the article and Google CEO got invited to a security summit and he said no. And that is literally all that was in that particular article.
And it's exclusive like, emails reveal close Google relationship with NSA.
Said, hi, nice to talk to you. Thanks. But no, I can't do that.
Well,
it was
right.
A brush off email from Eric.
Exactly. And to be clear, like if the NSA, you know, the NSA's job is both to, you know, spy for the US government, but also in theory to protect U.S. Corporations from being spied on, and if in part of that mission they were going to tell companies, you know, hey, here's this potential zero day or here's this potential hole, could you close it? Like that is a good communication. That is something you want every company to listen and hear. Oh, you know, there might be, you know, hackers from a different country trying to exploit your service. That is the sort of thing that most people would be happy their tax dollars are going for.
It's so funny. The article, Schmidt was unable to attend the security meeting, but here's what he wrote. General Keith, so great to see you. I'm unlikely to be in California that week, so I'm sorry I can't attend. Would love to see you another time. Thank you.
Yeah.
Smoking gun!
It's probably a... that guy, Eric, gets so many invitations to so many things.
I hope that he has enough social grace to say no politely.
Probably a memory key on his keyboard.
Yeah.
F9.
Gee, I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to be anywhere near you. I write that all the time.
Yeah.
No, I can't. I'm not going to say, no, I can't be on your stinking podcast. I say, I'm very busy. I'm very busy, but I look forward to seeing you.
I don't want to have you on me. I don't want to get near you.
Yeah. Well, and let me just say, if a government agency was offering ways to secure Google services, you know, I think it's great if Google were to participate in that sort of forum, as long as the communications were going one way towards the companies.
Absolutely.
To help them out.
Yes,
and even
they should talk.
You'd need to take it with a grain of salt, right? We now know that the NSA subverted NIST official documents for how to do encryption by proposing bad standards that they had a backdoor or they could crack more quickly. So no matter what, with any source, you're going to take it with a grain of salt. But in general, if someone is, you know, willing to provide you with potential feedback that it can improve your services, you want to listen to that.
So, Gina,
isn't
given
the other part of that, Matt, isn't it also true that if Google knew there was a threat out there, it has a moral obligation to tell other tech companies and the government?
Well, and that happened with the Heartbleed bug.
Exactly.
That somebody, you know, somebody noticed that, and they were going through all the proper channels. And I think the news leaked earlier than it was expected to, so you didn't have time to alert everybody. And when you've got something that big, you can't alert everyone without the news leaking at some point.
Right.
But I believe Google was going through all the right responsible disclosure procedures.
So does that, Gina, would that be enough to say, we'll give you encryption if you want it, we'll give you private browsing if you want it?
And we'll give you a dashboard to let you take out anything that we think we know about you.
That's one criticism people have of the current Google dashboard. It doesn't let you delete everything. I don't know if that's the case or not. Would that be enough, Gina?
Yeah, I think that's a good start. I think it's a good start.
Let's say you were living in a country where you could be arrested for being gay. Oh, wait a minute.
I wouldn't use the internet. I mean, really, yeah. I would try my best. Yes, if there was a place where I could be harmed or killed or arrested or whatever, and there are those places. Yeah, I mean, I use Tor a whole lot, and I wouldn't use the web. I mean, I would come up with code words, and you know, that's what people do, right? They come up with words and phrases that mean other things or whatever. I mean, I'd be really, 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 really paranoid.
Well, just using Tor alone is a signal, right?
Well, right. I mean, and that was one of the points that Janet made in her piece was like, you know, I was using cash to buy baby things and missing out on discounts that you get with those cards at Target or wherever, whatever. And I was using Tor and just the fact that I was using those things was, you know, made me look weird. I mean, you know, made me a target alone. Just the fact that I was using privacy tools. I thought another interesting point that she made is that she asked her friends and family when she called them or talked to them in person and said, hey, I'm pregnant. She asked them not to post it on Facebook. And so they wouldn't post to her wall, but they would Facebook message her about being pregnant. And she said, hey, I said not to put this on Facebook. And they're like, oh, no, but I'm, you know, that's why I didn't put it on your wall. So so regular users' conception of putting it on Facebook was the wall. But that private, you know, messages, Facebook messages was like, seemed like a private channel to them. Whereas I think that this is just a misconception that people have, you know, the idea that, you know, Gmail is private, or that, you know, Facebook or Google doesn't have, you know, Google doesn't have access to your Gmail is absolutely not true. So there's an education aspect around it as well.
I love it that, by the way, that I read this article on Think Progress and get a pop-up that says, like Think Progress on Facebook. Well, share this on Google Plus. I do. Yeah. I get all of that. Put this on Twitter.
And to be fair, I mean, I don't think it's fair to beat up Gina on this, because I think she's absolutely right in that she is channeling a large percentage of people who feel that way. And to be fair, like, there's a large chunk of people who have been surprised by the revelations about the NSA in the last year and are concerned with validity. And you know, if you haven't been someone who's been paying deep detailed attention to, like, oh, when did Google roll out its encryption and all that sort of stuff, then it's, you know, a relatively understandable strategy to be like, you know, okay, I'm concerned about Google and I'm just going to put that in a box and you know, I'll act accordingly. And if people want to dig all the way in, then they can find out we've, you know, fought against Department of Justice subpoenas that were very broad and stuff like that. But it's natural that given some of the news over the last year, you know, people would be worried. And how we address that and tackle that and educate it and how we respond to it and what we do better, you know, is a very fair question and something we need to think about.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, the change log. We'll put Gina to work with all the new changes. Quite a bit going on this week.
Yeah.
With the Google. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you work in a company, if you're in HR, if you need to hire, you know that that's kind of the word. Oh, I got to go to all these different sites and post our ad. ZipRecruiter is going to really simplify your life. One click of the mouse posts your job listing to 50-plus job boards, plus social networks like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. It couldn't be easier. If you want to fill that position fast with the perfect candidate, you need to post it everywhere. But how do you narrow down the results you get? How do you get to the right places? ZipRecruiter.com. You can post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into their easy to use interface. They'll give you a white labeled page with a company with your company logo and colors, so that they look just like an extension of your business. You could create an instant job page on your website, include a company careers page to use as a careers link. And ZipRecruiter.com even highlights the best candidates as they come in. So you screen them, rate them, and hire the right person fast. This is a great solution for anybody who has to do hiring. I want you to visit ZipRecruiter.com/twig, T-W-I-G, and we'll give you 4 days free, give you a great sense of how this works. ZipRecruiter.com/twig to use ZipRecruiter free for the next 4 days. You'll love it. ZipRecruiter.com/twig. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Jason Howell's filling in for Chad. Jason, do you know where the trumpets are kept?
Oh, I got this. I've been waiting the full episode to do that.
Gina Trefani has the latest from Google.
A bunch of new cards and improvements to Google Now coming out this week. First, Google Now works offline. So if you don't have an internet connection, you'll still see your Google Now cards, your appointments, and all the other reminders. And at the top, it'll show you, you know, when was last time this was updated.
That's great.
Indoor maps and mall directories are now in Google Now for Android. So if you go to the mall, you'll be able to find where that store is located,
nice.
What floor and which way
Look
you got to go. And related to that, if you search for a product on Google, you know, you're looking for a pair of boots or a crib or a stroller, talk about telepathy. Google will now let you know if the product you search for, if you're near a store, if it's in the store, if the product you search by is nearby.
And where the deals are. That's valuable to me. That's what Schmidt was talking about when he said you'd be walking down the street and say, oh, you need pants? They're right there.
That is pretty amazing. I mean,
I think that's useful. And I don't think it comes at the cost of any real personal information.
Really, you know, those programmatic ads that come after you if you looked at a canoe on Amazon that follow you around for 3 weeks. My fear is if I just happen to look up one thing, it's going to be constantly telling me, you're near a Radio Shack. They have phones.
Right.
They got phones. More phones there.
From experience, we know that Google Now is very easy to say, I don't want to know this anymore. Like, for instance, I searched for Jeopardy once, the TV show. And for a while, it was saying Jeopardy's on. And finally, I said, you know what? I don't really care. So but you go in and you change it. And it says, I don't care about Jeopardy. And it goes, okay, fine.
You get the, is this useful? This card useful right now? And you can just say yes or no, or you can just swipe and I'll say, okay, done for now. Good to go.
So doesn't feel harmful.
I love now.
In fact, let me make clear here. I want more Now cards. I want more Now things.
Me too. By the way, see, it says, interested in Jeopardy episodes? No. No. Interested in commute? This was the weird one for a while. I don't know why. It was telling me random people's commute updates. And I don't know what it says. Are you interested in commute updates for Dennis Appleton Nielsen?
It was tied into Waze, I'll bet.
I don't know why. I don't know who this guy is. He must be in my circles.
Maybe they've turned on commute sharing with you. And this is like your way of accepting it. I have no idea. But.
So, there's commute sharing. Is that it?
It's one of the stupidest features of Waze is that I really don't care when Joe Schmo starts driving to work.
But you know what? You might care what your wife's commute is.
Right.
Like, if your wife's coming home from work and you want to know when to put the Brussels sprouts on.
And that's exactly how I use it for Brussels sprouts, basically.
Because, God, you cannot cook those things long enough.
Then and pick up my own dinner on the way home because Brussels sprouts are a nuclear accident.
Chipotle.
They need a Google Now card that says, time to put Brussels sprouts. If you're cooking Brussels sprouts tonight, you should put them on now.
It goes off at 7 a.m.
Yeah. Start cooking now.
Well, you got Brussels sprouts delivered by Google Delivery yesterday, and they go bad in 3 days. Ergo, you need to cook them now.
That's the trick on this. There's a lot of things that would be useful. They need to, I think they're going to need to come up with a better way of managing the signals you send Google now as they get more and more signals in here.
Mm-hmm.
Already I've got 16 different items in my everything else category.
Well, including Leo, sometimes I want to send them more signals. I want to choose. This is something that I'm actually looking for. I'm looking for this kind of shoe. And then not only do I want Google Now to tell me, but I do want the merchants to compete for my business and say, here's the best deals.
Right.
And Google could be, this is the opposite end of the privacy discussion. I think that Google could be a conduit for signal sharing in a wider marketplace.
It's all about control. Just give me control.
Yes.
Well, that's what it's similar to what they do with TV shows. Now, if you search for a TV show, it'll say, remind me of new episodes, and you can say yes. or not. And it seems like products could be kind of implemented a similar way. The thing about Google Now, we were just talking about this last night, which Jason and I were talking about it last night on All About Android, is how it's kind of like subsumer is superseding all these like little apps, you know, the remembering where you're parked and, you know, what TV shows you'd be interested in. I mean, it's wonderful because it's all in one place and it's this like key, you know, piece of UI that's part of my phone. I mean, literally, I look at Google Now first thing in the morning and, you know, before I go to bed at night, you know, I look at, the, you know, weather and whatever. But it is kind of, you know, you're not going to these other apps to do these things, right? Which is kind of nice because it opens up indie developers to work on other things, but also not so great if you made a parking app, right? But it's interesting to see Google Now sort of gobble up that functionality and just present it all in this one interface that you know we're going to see on our watches and on our you know eyeglasses and whatever else.
I would honestly be happy if I could just, you know, sometimes Google Now is like, do you want to use your corp account or your personal account? And I'm like,
oh,
yes, yes, I am me. Yes, I have all these accounts. Hey, you know, hold them all together.
Matt, listen, you're the all-powerful wizard, Matt Cutts. You got into I.O., okay? You have proven your power on Earth. You once and for all solve this problem. I want Google smart, damn it. I have two accounts. I'm the same person. Google, can I just tell you that I'm the same person? It's driving me nuts.
Yeah, I agree. And every time I've heard you complain about Google Now, I'm off on a run and I'm like, there's something wrong with Google Apps for Domains and it's on the wrong account. And I think personally, it shows that Google historically has been like, you tell us what you want, we'll give you the answer. And we haven't really had that great of account functionality. And Google Plus and all that stuff has gotten us a lot further. But it's still like, yep, you can have we have both kinds of country, you know, both kinds of music, country and Western. But I like country Western, you know, show me.
It's a hard problem. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, yeah. I know. It's amazing
smart,
how well you
Leo.
Do.
No, don't let him off the hook. Don't be a nice guy. Don't let him off the hook. You're smart. They can figure this out.
Yeah, I agree. And especially, you know, you ought to have capabilities if you work at Google and that's your corp account. And then when you leave Google, you ought to lose those capabilities, but it shouldn't be the end of the world.
Yeah,
yeah, you shouldn't lose your search history or whatever. So
I wish I had those capabilities, Matt.
I think
like
this
very
is
very powerful capabilities.
I just searched for a TV show and in the knowledge graph or whatever you guys call, I can't remember the card that comes up on the right. Remind me about new episodes. I can click that, and that'll just show up in Google Now. That's a really nice, and it's not turned on unless I turn it on.
And it's great for upcoming movies. Like, oh yeah, I really want to see the new Hunger Games movie when it comes out. Just tell me, you know, because I don't, you know, I have a baby. I don't get to pay attention to that anymore. Yeah, that's really great.
By the way, do you watch Orphan Black, Leo?
I do. I love it.
It's really good.
I don't have time to watch all the good TV now. All of a sudden, TV got really good.
Yeah.
Sunday nights are jam-packed.
Soon I will be able to download those shows onto my Chromebook Pixel on my beautiful clear screen.
And then Leo can watch Big Bang Theory.
No!
Sorry. Couldn't help it.
All right, before we get into the Big Bang Theory conversation again, let me carry on with the change.
Matt, you have been listening. See, I told you Google knows too much about you.
Yeah, it's not because he's watching the show, Leo.
Matt Cutts is big data.
Google Maps got a huge, big update rolling out now on Android. Lane guidance tells you which lane you should be in before you make that turn.
Why didn't other things do that? It's so obvious. Get in the left lane now. You're going to be turning left.
No, the lane I should be in for the Bay Bridge is the one that gets me off before the bridge because I'm scared of it.
I know. Well, for all of us, because there is that particular on-ramp. If you get on that, you can't get off. You're going to Oakland.
Yeah.
And you can do better.
So you can now save maps to use offline. So are you going camping? You know, someplace not a lot of connectivity. You can save maps for offline use. You got better filters for finding businesses when you need them. So, you know, is that bar open or shut now, or open or closed right now? And this is really interesting. Uber app integration will compare transit and walking directions with Uber access in cities where Uber supported and only if you have the Uber app installed.
Oh, you have to have the Uber app installed.
Yeah, yes. But fascinating that Uber has a
an
official position here.
Yeah, why Uber? Why not Lyft? Why Uber?
And Google did invest in Uber, so they're going to get crap for that.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, Google Ventures more than $150 million, I think, into Uber. Really, really interesting. A little weird, I thought, the Uber integration there. But everybody loves Uber, so.
Well, not the taxi commission in New York, LA, San Francisco.
Finally, Google Shopping Express came to Manhattan and West Los Angeles this week. And in fact, I was at the ThinkUp office on Monday and I decided to try it out and it was great. I loved it. I ordered up some snacks for the office and it got super overloaded the first day in Manhattan. So I didn't get a delivery time on Monday, but it came the next day. But the whole idea is that you can order stuff and get same day delivery from major retailers, Target, Fairway, etc. First orders get $10 off. That was a nice discount. And Google's offering, I think it's a 6-month free subscription for unlimited free deliveries. So really nice. It's not in Brooklyn yet, but it's coming to Brooklyn and Queens soon. So I'm excited to impress my wife with that when that happens.
Diapers. Diapers at the door.
Diapers. Well, you know, we do Amazon Mom. We have like it's basically Amazon Prime, but like a subscribe and save, which is like send us three boxes of diapers every couple of months. Yeah, which is fantastic.
I love subscribe.
Do they up the size automatically?
No.
What's that?
They don't up the size automatically.
They don't up the size. And in fact, I got a bunch of boxes that were too small because my daughter is growing like a weed. Especially ever since we had the baby. I realized how much we just have this parade of delivery people coming to our door because we just don't have the time to go shopping as much. So I think this is good, really good business for Google. And it'll be interesting to see how they stack up, you know, against Amazon.
You saw the what was the dry goods play that Amazon's doing? It's you get for $6, you get a 45-pound box. Mm. Did you see that?
I didn't.
It's like a partner to it's called Prime Box. I can't remember. I'll have to search for it. It's kind of it's Amazon Prime.
Prime Pantry?
Pantry. Thank you. Very good. Jason Howell for the win.
On the draw.
$6, 45-pound box. And it's basically groceries. It's grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, yeah. Lifehacker. There you go.
Yeah. They Amazon, it's good. Let them battle. That's good.
Let the battles begin.
Yeah. Get in there and everybody else. Come on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, I think
there's going to be a crash of retail real estate in this country.
I'd hate to be in a brick and mortar store at this point. Oof. It's a little scary.
But Shopping Express actually, I mean, it is local retailers.
Right.
I mean, from what that's I can tell, nice. It's like a guy in a cap with a truck that goes to the Target for you and brings it to you, right?
And they bought all those old Cosmo bicycles that were lying around with the big baskets, I hope. Grocery stores used to do that. There used to be a milkman. You're too young to remember this, but the milkman come to your door.
In the East Coast, Leo, a chip delivery guy, Charlie's Chips.
Charlie's
all
Chips.
All he did was deliver pretzels and chips.
The chip man's here.
Yeah. Huh. Imagine that. I have the I have Union County booked up. I've got every pretzel there is.
I remember that you had to remember the night before, I think it was Tuesday night, you had to put the milk delivery out and the empties in the milk box. And then the milkman had come and he put the milk. And then you knew they were in trouble when they started selling milk shampoo. That was like...
Uh-oh. Oh, dear.
That doesn't seem like a good thing. Sorry.
That's all I got.
That was, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Jason, you know where the timps are?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bring in the timpanies.
The Google Chief.
No.
Sorry.
Oh, Gina's got to start it all over again.
You know what, Gina? You might as well throw in the Google camera update that hit today.
Is there an update?
There's an update that allows you to take pictures while you're shooting video. So they added
that's not like a Zoe a little bit. Yeah.
Well, no. So you're shooting a video and you can actually also take pictures at the same time if you tap it. So.
Okay. Wow.
But that was unintentional. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Jason.
Leo, I have to go in 5 minutes, but
what?
I wanted to make sure I got in. I told you, 2:15.
You told me?
What?
When did you tell me that? That's okay. You can go anytime you want.
I just want to make sure before I leave that there's a whole mess of new Chromebooks coming out.
Yeah.
Yay.
Hey.
Intel's doing some.
Intel's doing lots of them. They did an announcement. Mm-hmm. So I complained about Acer not having enough new Chromebooks because I was wrong because they have two more new ones now.
Yeah. So I feel bad now because I'm starting to come around on the Chromebook thing. I wouldn't buy one. But,
come on in. The water's fine.
I wouldn't buy one, but I think I understand why a school would.
Yeah.
Oh, it's phenomenal for schools.
Yeah.
I shock even Googlers. I've been in the room with Googlers, and I point out that the Pixel's my only machine. Even they look at me funny.
Hey, I've been using Pixel as my primary for almost a year now. So
yeah.
Wow. See, I wouldn't go that far. I think that's crazy talk. But more and more we get calls, like on the radio show, from people. I had a call. Oh, I felt so bad for her. Very nice person. Just couldn't, you know, Windows 8 was not updating, and she didn't. It was clear she had no idea what a computer did or anything. But she had to have one, right? You have to have one. And I said, what do you do? She said, well, I do some email, and we surf, and my husband balances the checkbook. And I more and more I'm saying to normal people, you don't need the complexity of a computer.
Right.
You need a Chromebook. I mean, there are other people like me who need the complexity of a computer and can handle it. But a lot of people can't.
Like my parents and viruses. Mm-hmm. All that's gone.
She couldn't figure out how to turn the thing off. Serious. And you know what? It's not easy in Windows 8. And she said, the guy told me to press the moon button.
I love it.
That's all she knew. Man. So Chromebook would be so, but it's hard. But this is the problem. And I think Microsoft's responding to this by making Chromebook like, I think they're going to make Chromebook like Windows machines. But the problem is that people say, oh, well, no, a computer equals Windows. Those are the same. It's a personal computer. It runs Windows. And so it's hard to convince them that a tablet will work. And in many cases, maybe they do need a keyboard. Or and if not a tablet, then a Chromebook.
Yeah.
A new Chrome desktop machine.
Yeah. Having Intel inside helps.
Yeah. I think it does.
Yeah.
And there's up to 11 hours on some machines. The thing is, the Pixel to me is the perfect combination. Good screen, touch screen, and LTE.
But it's way too expensive.
It's to demonstrate the idea. And if you were to get a Haswell chip in there so the battery lasts a little longer, my heart would.
All right. So going back to the power of Matt, you got Gina into IO. You're going to fix this identity thing. You're going to make sure they come out with the next generation Chromebook, okay? Pixel. All right?
I promise I've been asking for Haswell Chromebooks like as soon as they came out.
I got the sense that that's not a product. The Pixel's not really a product. It's just, it was a concept.
I love this thing. And I would buy that in a second.
Me too.
Second.
A reference device. I like that Matt has a honey-do list now.
Yes, I like this. Now, next time, Matt, you're up there with Larry and Sergey. Would you do me a favor?
I'll just put it on the Twiggy Do list.
Yes.
Yeah. I've got to go, guys.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Give my best to Warren and Bill and the gang.
Yeah, will do.
All right. Take care.
If I see Bomber on the street, I'll
say hi to Steve and Satya. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at City University of New York, author of Public Parts, BuzzMachine.com. Take care, Jeff.
Thanks.
We will take a break, come back with more. Matt Cutts is going to stick around. Gina Trapani, more of Google This Weekend. Google coming up in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. We're not talking law firm here. Actually, it was founded by lawyers who said, you know, you don't really need a law firm. If there, you know, there's some basic things you could just do yourself online at your specific direction. Things like incorporate, create an LLC, or a Chapter S or Chapter C corporation. Visit LegalZoom.com and you'll see actually there's a lot of stuff to start your business. You could form a nonprofit, a sole proprietorship, a general partnership. You could get a DBA. You could trademark search and registration. You really ought to register your trademark, absolutely. All of the stuff that you might need to do. And by the way, they provide the business services that you will need, like register agent services. This is what we do. By the way, we are a corporation in Delaware. Did all of this for, get ready, $99 plus the state filing fees. And Delaware is very affordable. It was one of the reasons I did it, Delaware. Everything you need for running your business, but also for personal wills and trusts. Do you have a power of attorney financial? Do you have a health care power of attorney? Very important. Got pets? You might want to get a pet protection agreement. No reason to pay a law firm for stuff like this. You can do it yourself at LegalZoom.com in very simple steps. You complete the questionnaire. They create the documents. They file them for you. You get the package by mail, you're golden. It really is easy. Now, if you do say, well, okay, but should I do, I don't know, a Chapter S Corp, a Chapter C Corp, and an LLC, what's the difference? You say, I need to ask somebody about, well, this is nice. They've arranged for legal advice from experienced attorneys registered in your state for a very low pre-negotiated flat rate monthly fee. This is a really good deal all round. LegalZoom.com. Everything you need to get a lot of important stuff done for your family, for yourself, for your business. LegalZoom provides self-help services through independent attorneys, but it's not a law firm. And, of course, they're on self-help Q&A. Visit LegalZoom.com. Use our offer code TWIG, and you'll save on your legal needs. You'll get access to that network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. And when you use the offer code TWIG, we will give you $10 off at checkout just to make it even more affordable. LegalZoom.com. Make sure you use the offer code TWIG. Thank you, LegalZoom. Matt Cutts is here. He is the man who fights spam for Google on the web search results. Great to have. Did you see his video? I got it. The best thing that he does is the webmaster tools. It's google.com/web. Not the best thing, but the public facing thing you do that we love. You probably do very important things that we don't know about. Right?
Less than you think.
Yeah. In my mind, Matt is like Rocky, like because you're always running while you're listening to Twig. It's always dun, 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 dun. Like I think about the Rocky song. Dun, dun,
dun. I love it. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. He posted. Let me see if I can find this. You got a lot of attention for this, even though, frankly, I think most SEO types should know by now that the body is the most important part of your content, not the those meta tags. People don't still do that in the meta tags and the header and all that stuff.
Yeah, you'd think.
It's kind of amazing. So, but you know what? I think your most recent video really gets that point across.
Cuts with a quick public service reminder. I just wanted you to remember that it's important to pay attention to the head of a document, but you should also pay attention to the body.
Shouldn't your head be missing and only your body be there?
Description, meta tags, all that sort of stuff.
So what are you wearing? He said he's wearing a green suit.
Yeah, I do have a green screen suit that I use for just such occasions, you know, for Halloween and that kind of stuff.
That is awesome. Do you have a headpiece, too, if you wanted to be completely invisible?
Yeah, it was actually flipped over on the back, so I could go visit Microsoft.
And by the way, I think that's a Pixel.
Yeah,
everyone's in a hand will show up.
I can't stop talking with my hands, so you'll see invisibility go in front of my face every so often.
I love this. But. And he's got a Pixel in front of him, by the way. I think we noticed that. Google.com/webmasters. It really, I can't believe that there'd be anybody who wouldn't know this.
Yeah.
But there probably are.
Well, there are people who literally believe in a meta tag called the Google Prey meta tag.
What?
And the idea is it's a joke. You know, somebody made it up. But if it gets repeated enough online, people are like, oh, did you add your Google Prey meta tag? And it's like Google Prey, make me number one or something like that.
Like Prey like prayer?
Yeah. So
not Prey like hunted.
not like hunted. No, so there's a lot of misconceptions to debunk. Some people still think we use meta keywords for web ranking, and we just don't. We really don't. So,
here it is. Here's an article on the Google Prey meta tag. Google Prey. Google, please rate me high by keyword UMAX search. Is that the weirdest thing that you've ever seen people
do?
No,
not even close. I mean, there's a whole church of Google. I mean, it's crazy. So,
is the church of Google populated by SEOs?
No. It was a few years ago. I think it's died off mostly now.
We worship you, oh church of the church of Google.org. it's the home of Googleism.
Yeah.
Wow. Of course, it says join us on Reddit, so they may be a little confused.
Right.
We at the Church of Google believe the search engine Google is the closest humankind has ever come to directly experiencing an actual God. Wow.
You can tell that's from a few years ago, yeah.
Yeah. So give me an example of something else crazy people have done to get number one on Google.
Well, people try all kinds of tricks. You know, they're convinced if you buy ads, you'll rank number one. And then there's other competing theories that say if you buy ads, we'll demote you. And you just want to get all those conspiracy theorists in a room and let them fight it out. And like, okay, you guys decide. And then whoever comes out will debunk that misconception.
Because there's so many.
There really is.
Here's the prayer, by the way. You should put this. I have heard if you put this in your meta tag, all your hopes and prayers will be realized.
Yeah.
Our Google, who art in cyberspace, hallowed be thy domain. Thy search to come, thy results be done on 127.0.0.1 as it is in the Googleplex. Give us this day our daily searches and forgive us our spam as we forgive those who spam against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from Microsoft. For thine is the search engine and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. And there it is. In binary.
But the weird thing is, there are people who are literally creating new misconceptions. So I don't know if you saw last week, there was somebody who claimed to be a former Google employee in AdSense. And you read through it, and you're like, there's no way this person worked for Google. Like, right. Every single thing about it is wrong. Like you, the terminology's wrong. None of the terms make sense. You double check with the ads team and they're like, we don't have any color coding scheme the way they imply.
Right.
Like, it's not, if you're a real employee, it's not hard to prove that you used to be an employee. You could say, hey, you know, Charlie's Cafe, that electric door on the left, it sticks a little bit.
Like that would do it.
Enough to prove it, right?
Yeah.
And yet this paste bin anonymous thing is like Google is trying to cut off publishers to save the money for itself. Well, we actually refund that money to publishers. So you've got like some weird people who are just like, okay, I'm disgruntled. I'm unhappy with one part of Google, so I'm going to lie and say I used to work there. And here's all these things that people who don't know better might believe. It's weird.
Three, actually, Google acquisitions, little ones. Odometry, an online attribution firm. I don't know what Odometry does. I don't even know how to say it. But but Google has acquired them to give advertisers a better sense of how their online ad campaigns are working. It's an ad metrics play. Stackdriver and a cloud analysis tool. But my favorite is Apatas.
Oh, if Google can bring better restaurant websites to the world, that's good work right there.
Beautiful website restaurant. So it's a provider that does restaurants websites. Integrating Grubhub, OpenTable, Apatas.
No more Flash.
Apatas.
No more
down
images.
With Flash.
Apatas.
Yeah, images instead of text.
Yes. So it's like a Squarespace for restaurants. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of, you know what? Somebody's got to do this for radio stations. I think somebody did, but whoever it is has no taste. I've never seen more ugly websites than radio station websites. They're the worst.
Yeah. It's like black background. It's really bad.
Oh, well, I guess because radio stations have so many ads, they're all jingly. And I shouldn't pick on this station. I just entered in some magic call sign and I found this. This is a very typical radio station website. That you find the content. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all horrible. I hope this is not one of my affiliates. but these guys could do a better job. You know what I'm saying?
To go back to the head and body thing, though, briefly, we just enabled Twitter cards and like the OG, the meta tags and the OG open graph tags for sharing content on like on different social networks, on Google Plus, on Facebook and Twitter cards in particular. And it was really the first time I've looked at the head of ThinkUp's pages in a really long time, because it's, you know, it seems obvious that it's the content that really matters. But I think some of that those sharing hooks, that little, you know, snippet that you see with the image and whatever other metadata you see, like in a shared social post, that has to help a little bit. I mean, I like to think that, you know, Google's, you know, crawlers are getting decent data from those head tags just because, you know, people are hooking up sharing.
Well, you don't
want
to throw it out, right? I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, and in fact, if you do a search for Google Webmaster meta tags, there's an official document that says meta tags that Google understands, and we go through that in more detail. The main one is everybody thinks that if I throw some keywords in the meta keywords tag, that's going to help, and that doesn't help. So if we could just shift that focus to, like, you know, using schema.org or some of these, you know, other ways of describing what you can or can't share or what's on the page, that stuff could potentially be useful. It's just we don't use the keywords tag because it's been so spammy.
Right. But things like rel equals author, that's a really useful thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
or
I use that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep,
or rel what?
Rel canonical.
Yeah.
So you can say this URL is here, but it should be over here. And that gives Google a great hint to say, show this URL instead.
And again, this is all described. All of these are described at the Webmasters Tools page. So here's the canonical URL explanation. This is, you would think everybody would know this.
Yeah.
And actually, here's the page. Meta tags Google understands with Matt Cutts many moons ago. That is a very young and somewhat larger Matt Cutts.
I didn't have gray hair back then. Yeah.
You know, you're lucky though. When your videos, you look fatter in your old videos. That's good. That's what you want.
The directional trend is the right direction.
It's the right direction. I look so much thinner in my old videos. It's very depressing. I don't care about hair color. You always want to look fatter in the old videos.
That's why I only do head and shoulders here.
Yeah, you're a smart woman. Just Nate, there is no record of any of this. So I don't know whether to believe this or not. This was quite a scandalous article in All Things, on the Digits blog, and I almost said All Things D, and the Digits blog in the Wall Street Journal. The Google Glass parts estimated to cost what? Less than $80 for a $1,500 product. This is from TechInsightsTeardown.com. Google has said that's absolutely nuts, but they didn't say how much it does cost. And I know you don't know because you didn't build Glass, Matt Cutts, so I'm not asking you. But boy, if that's the case, now some have said, well, we wanted Google Glass to, somebody said we wanted Google Glass to cost a painful amount so that people would be serious about buying it if you want to be an Explorer.
We know the Explorer Edition's price was pumped up a bit.
Right.
But that's
more than a bit. I hope it's not $1,420 bit.
There's no way.
That would be.
Well, and I'm sure that they say, oh, this is, you know, 20 cents worth of plastic.
Right.
But if you're doing a small limited run, doing the injection molding or whatever the plastic, that's actually a pretty large cost to do it.
They say the most expensive component is the processor, the TI OMAP 4430 applications processor. That's an ARM chip. $13.96. 16 gigs of NAND memory from Toshiba, $8. But you're right. That doesn't take into account R&D. That doesn't take into account custom stuff, molds, and so forth.
No.
Actually, this could be good news if you were hoping for a consumer release of Glass. It means if this is, you know, maybe when they did, maybe it does cost $80 if you made a million of them. Mm-hmm. That could be good news, right?
In which case, Glass might be affordable, which, I mean, you know, that would be a good thing.
Right.
When it comes out publicly.
Do we care about Foursquare separating its app? You know, it's a funny thing. On the Yelp, when the Yelp pushed the update, it said, we're working really hard to keep all of our stuff in one app. Obviously, a little bit of a little.
I mean, I think the trend is worth commenting on. And we actually talked about it in last week's episode.
It's
interesting to see this sort of unbundling. So we have Foursquare splitting its app into a check-in app and then to a recommendations app. We see Dropbox making Carousel. And what was the other one that Dropbox did?
I
thought there was another Dropbox app.
Evernote's done this for a long time. Evernote has Food and Hello.
Evernote Food and Hello. Yeah. And even Google did it with Drive. So Drive,
yeah, I don't really understand that one. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, well, it is a little weird.
They took the editing capability out of Drive and put it into Docs.
Well,
right, there's a Sheets app and a Docs app for editing and then Drive for browsing your files.
My naive take on that is that when you say Google Drive, people think of some storage. Place to store stuff.
Right.
And so there might have been some mismatch where people were like, oh, Google Docs, I can understand that. That's where I edit my docs. And so maybe they were trying to bring that more closely in line with users' expectations of what they thought the app would do. You know, if you're just looking at an icon and a name, you're like, oh, okay, this is where I'll go to edit my Google Docs.
J.C. Calhoun has created a new verb for this kind of thing. It's called quickstring yourself. because remember Netflix was going to divide itself up into streaming and disc business, and one of them was called Quickster, which didn't last.
That's not a positive association.
You've been Quickstered. No.
You've been Quickstered. Quickster doesn't exist anymore. And of course, I did mention Facebook separating out Messenger from
Facebook's doing
it.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're being Quickstered.
I'm very curious to get your take on a story. There was this article on ZDNet about Google experimenting with hiding URLs in Chrome.
I saw that. You know, it's funny because I remember talking to Tim Berners-Lee, the man who invented URLs and the incidentally the World Wide Web. You might have heard of it. And he said, I never thought humans would look at URLs at all. The URL scheme was really designed to be machine readable. And he just never thought people would say anything like www.google.com. He thought that's not going to happen.
Huh.
So Chrome, how is Chrome doing this?
Well, so this, I think, is in a canary. And essentially what it does is there's a chip. I think it's called the origin chip. And it shows you just the domain name of the URL. And then I assume you can click and get more information if you want to. And there's pros and cons. It's very rare you see people from Google sort of disagree outside of Google, but I think Paul Irish has said, oh, I hope this doesn't happen. And meanwhile, Jake Archibald, who's also at Google, has said, oh, this can help with phishing. So that sort of shows that people have different points of view on this. And I was kind of curious, what would you guys think if Google started to show this origin chip instead of the URL in Chrome?
Oh, that makes sense. The idea being because a URL is so complex, people often misread it. So they think they're going to google.com when instead they're going to google.hacker.com.
Yeah.
And so by making it more clear as being the real URL. But I'm looking at these examples from the Jake's blog. Mm-hmm. I can't tell the difference. I don't understand which is which.
Well, one is halifax.co.uk, and the other one is halifax.co.uk. Credit cards. Right. Whatever.
You keep going until you get to the com part.
Yeah, to the slash. Or,
right, yeah. Well, I've seen that. I mean, this happens all the time with phishing.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of split on this. I mean, on one hand, I really like the idea that a user doesn't have to deal with the URL, and I really like the changes that Chrome has made to URLs thus far, like hiding the HTTP and, you know, graying out the path, whereas the domain is
that's
black.
That's a good way to do it.
I really like that. So that's happened kind of slowly over time. And it's like, oh, yeah, why do you not need to see HTTP or HTTPS? And the lock, you know, indicates HTTPS. And so this seems like a natural progression. This feels like the same kind of debate that people have about whether or not the file system path should be exposed to the user.
Apparently,
or not.
iOS, I didn't know this, but on that. Safari and iOS 7 does that. So here's the example on where it just shows the top domain. It doesn't even show the extended domain. You have to tap it to see more. That's a good way to do it.
At the same time, when you're dealing, I mean, particularly someone like me who's coming from being, you know, being a blogger where like the idea of a permalink or, you know, the full URL was sort of very, very important. The idea of sharing URLs or sharing pieces of content or a piece of content is assigned to a particular URL that if it's, you know, structured well, it actually does read well and mean something.
Part of the problem is that a lot of URLs are not well structured.
Well, right. A lot of URLs aren't. So if this change were to happen, I wouldn't be totally against it, but there would have to be a piece of UI that made it really easy to share a permanent link to a piece of content.
Yeah.
What happens if you copy it in order to share it? It would copy the full URL.
Yeah, I'm sure it would, But I'm with you, Gina. I'm really torn because as a power user, I really want to know what the full URL is. But I can see, you know, for an average person who doesn't need all those details and might get phished.
There's other ways to fish. You know, I was fished on Twitter a couple of years ago. I didn't fall for it, but it had a link to TVVITTER, which looks like Twitter if you type it out. And it was by chance, I think, that I noticed that wasn't Twitter. It was a login page and everything.
Yeah.
So there's other ways besides having a obfuscated URL. People start using Bitly and other stuff. You know, they'll just mess with it.
Yep.
I don't think it's a bad idea to syntax highlight. We could agree that would be okay, right?
Yeah.
Color green.
Yeah.
The top level domain.
Interesting.
Anything else? Thank you, Matt, for asking about that. I'm glad. We were gonna.
Yeah. I was curious.
Wanted to talk about that. Tim, it was never the plan to see these things. He thought only the machine would see it. I don't know what he thought the humans would see, but.
That's crazy.
And now I say things in conversation like nope.com, which my daughter is picking up. So.
Really? Oh, that's cute.
Yes. And, you know, when we're messing around.
You don't
want
to say no anymore, so you say nope.com.
Nope.com / never gonna happen. You know?
It's really worked its way into the culture. Yeah,
it works its way into the culture. Exactly.
Yeah.
There was one interesting story about the observations of an internet middleman.
Yeah, this one, I actually tweeted this out because I thought this was really great. Mark Taylor writing at Level 3. You know, the debate is on about open internet, about what the FCC is doing or not doing to protect the internet, about the idea of charging access fees for edge providers, things like that. But this really puts some facts into the argument. Because one of the things, we had a big argument. I had an argument with Brian Brushwood, who has a libertarian streak. On Twit this Sunday, he said, you don't want regulation of any kind. But when you have companies acting so anti-competitively, maybe you have to. So Level 3, that they're an intermediate internet provider. They provide big connections to big networks, and they have a lot of peering relationships, 51 peering relationships. That's how they get access to the rest of the internet. So if you're... Google uses Level 3. If you're Google.com, you get onto the internet via Level 3. They need to still get you to other places that aren't customers. They do that by having relationships with other big backbone providers who have relationships with their customers. So it turns out that by having 51 peers in 45 cities, they're able to reach the world, the entire internet, 13.8 gigabits per second in bandwidth going through all of these points. They say it sounds technical. This is very readable. Mark does a great job of explaining this. Read the article. You don't have to be a geek to understand it. He says the average number of interconnection cities per peer is 5, but ranges from 1 to 20. But there's a little bit of an interesting thing happening with 6 companies, 5 in the U.S., 1 in Europe. They're all 6 of them broadband providers. I think if you've got 5 in the U.S., you could probably name them. Comcast, Time Warner, Verizon, AT&T. He doesn't. He doesn't. In fact, he obfuscates the information. But what he does show is a graph. Now, he says, normally in peering relationships, it's not unusual in a peering relationship for these switches to get saturated as traffic. You know, traffic moves around on the internet. They get saturated. And what everybody does, everybody in the business does, is they put more equipment on. What you're seeing here is a graph of saturation happening. A 100 gigabit connection. Let's see. This is 100 gigabit interconnect in Dallas for the week of April 3rd. You see those flat tops on the left-hand graph? That is a congested port. The flat tops are packets not getting through. It's getting clipped at the top. And if you look at on the right, you'll see the graph. That's dropped packets. That's a lot. So many dropped packets that if you're on the other end of that connection, your video is not going to play. You're going to get buffering. You're going to have all sorts of congestion. Traffic won't get through or it'll get through delayed. It's a mess. Now, go down to the graphs below, Jason, if you would. 100 gigabit interconnect in DC with a different peer, no congestion. So you see peaks. But those peaks are never clipped. And if you go to the right, dropped packets, none. So it is normal. This is normal to get congestion. But what's also normal is without sending a bill, you fix it. That's how the internet works. Mm-hmm. He points out, though, that these 5 broadband providers in the U.S. haven't been. He says, they're all large broadband consumer networks with dominant or exclusive market share in their local market. He says in countries where consumers have multiple broadband choices like the UK, you won't see these congested peers. These congested peers have been in place for well over a year where our peer refuses to augment capacity. In other words, they know there's congestion, they know there's packet dropping, and they don't do anything intentionally. They violate the unwritten compact, and they don't fix it. He says they're deliberately harming the service they deliver to their paying customers. They're not allowing us to fulfill the requests their customers make for content. That gives the customers a bad experience. In fact, if you look at customer satisfaction It's very low for all of these broadband service providers. But he says there's one purpose and one purpose only, to blackmail us into giving them money. To blackmail us into paying them to upgrade. And this is what we heard from Netflix. It's what we're hearing more and more. This is not a case of, this is a case of blackmailing peers, but this is also going to happen on edge networks. His final line, shouldn't a broadband consumer network with near monopoly control over their customers be expected, if not obligated, to deliver a better experience than this? What they're doing is going to level three and say, if you would like to reach our customers, perhaps you would like to give us some money so we could, you know, they're crying. They're saying, oh, it's costing us so much money. You've got to give us money to upgrade our switches. That's not what's going on.
Yeah. Very well explained. Thank you. That's why Leo should be president of the internet.
It's just, it's very frustrating. And, you know, a lot, you know, Brian and others, and I agree, you know, government intervention is a blunt weapon and can have all sorts of negative consequences. But when companies act in monopolistic ways, there is no other, there's no free market force that can save you. There is no competition. And he points out, I think, very well that in countries where there is competition, this doesn't happen. If you had a choice and you were getting crappy service, you'd go somewhere else.
Yeah, my home internet connection, my new home internet connection here in Brooklyn is now, is definitely the upper graph and not the bottom graph.
Isn't that frustrating?
Yes. Yes.
It's frustrating. And yeah, I don't know if the solution is to get the FCC. I mean, my feeling is the solution is to get the FCC to do the right thing and to declare these common carriers, telecom companies, regulated as the telecom companies are. But maybe that's not the solution. I don't know. I mean, we've got it. It's clearly a problem. And I'm glad level three stepped forward. They didn't name names because these are customers, et cetera, et cetera. But they stepped forward, and I think that these are very telling graphs. Yeah, it's really
great piece.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. I don't know what we do about it. SaveTheInternet.com. That's what you do. SaveTheInternet.com. They have a page. What can I do? You know, you can fund Alexis Ohanian's billboard across the street from the FCC. You can pick up the phone and call the FCC. You can email openinternet@fcc.gov. There's lots of things you can do. You can write a letter to the editor. You can write to your Congress critter. Lots of information at SaveTheInternet.com.
How is the billboard coming along?
Oh, let's check. He did this on CrowdTilt, which is Alexis's startup crowdfunding. Let me just search for Save Net Neutrality Billboard in FCC's backyard. I gave him $1,000. I just wanted to jumpstart it. God, he's so close. 8 days left. He needs $20,000. He's raised $15,000. That'll be another thing you could do. Give him $1. You don't have to give him a lot. It's $5. Whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to do this right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just, you know what? I think one of the reasons it's hard to raise the money is because it's like, well, this isn't going to change anything. You put a billboard out in front of Tom Wheeler, he's already getting millions from the lobbyists. Why would a billboard change anything?
But make him work past it every day, you know?
You know, actually, there is one crowdfunding thing that I really am interested in. It's Larry Lessig's plan to create a super PAC.
Yeah, May1.us.
Mm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's really cool.
So you're all for it, huh?
Yeah. I've donated, and
I should give money to this too.
There's a couple groups, and this is one of the larger ones that's starting to use this idea of like PACs. You know, let people spend. You know, a PAC can take lots of donor money and then spend that in some very flexible ways. So if you can use that same machinery against some of these super PACs, that could be very cool. And so I think they're trying to raise $1 million in 30 days, and they're actually pretty far along.
Are they?
Yeah, they, like, in 4 days they'd raise like $500,000 or something like that.
So the idea is, let's get Congress people elected. It's the May Day PAC. Let's get Congress people elected that will vote to get money out of elections. Mm-hmm. And it actually is kind of perversely sensible. You're never going to get people who are dependent on big money to get elected to vote against big money in Congress. Mm-hmm. So here's what you do. Create a super PAC. Go out and lobby it. Raise funds. Get this one last election we'll pay for. Get these people in. reform the whole thing.
Yeah.
And Larry, of course, everybody knows the guy who started Creative Commons Law, professor at Stanford and Harvard. And we've had him on. We love Larry. He's just
this
fabulous.
Is awesome. Yeah, good for him. Yeah. This is great.
And his idea, you know, he for a long time was talking a lot of, you know, Creative Commons was all about getting the music industry off our backs. He finally realized this is never going to happen until we get the influence of money out of politics. That's so he said, let's go after the root cause of all of this, which is Tom Wheeler, the chairman of the FCC, every member of Congress, the president of the United States. They're all basically doing the bidding of people who have deep pockets because that's how you get elected. So let's change that. Let's reform the influence of money in politics.
And I think, I mean, if you look at it, they're almost up to $600,000 and it's the 7th of May. So they're doing like $100,000 a day. So they're trying to get a million.
They're 59% funded.
Yeah. I say go way over the top because if they've got more, you know, ammunition or dry powder or whatever you want to call it to tackle money in politics, they can have a lot more of an impact.
And if you feel bad, you can say, I only want to fund Democrats or I only want to fund Republicans. So you can you can choose. I really like this idea. Now, because it's a super PAC, you're going to have to say who your employer is. There are government. There are, oddly enough, rules about contributions that that they have to adhere to. But you know what? They're pretty easy to get around. Yeah. That's the problem. The website is mayone.us. I like this idea. I'd hate to see what Brian Brushwood thinks of it, but I like this idea. I love Brian, but he lives in Texas, and he lives in a just as we in San Francisco live in a bubble. He lives in a bubble. That's all. I love it.
On a much lighter crowdfunding note, my friend Andy Bayo actually sold his company upcoming.org to Yahoo like back in 2005.
I saw he had an announcement today at 10 a.m. Yeah. What was that?
Yeah, so a few months ago, Yahoo calls him. They sunsetted Upcoming, right? And they, you know, Andy had a team of people kind of try to archive it. And then a few months ago, Yahoo sends him an email and says, hey, do you want to buy back the domain upcoming.org? He buys back the domain, and he launched a Kickstarter to rebuild Upcoming.
What?
from the bottom up using modern tools, which is really kind of amazing.
So,
yeah. Wow. Oh,
that is hysterical.
And I think he launched the Kickstarter today, and he blew through his goal.
Already?
It was a small goal. It was like 30K he was trying to raise.
I got to find the page. Well, I'll just search for Andy Bayo and Kickstarter.
Yeah, Andy Bayo and Kickstarter.
Andy's associated with Kickstarter a little bit, which helps as well.
Yeah,
oh, he is.
He helped build Kickstarter, so he's associated, and he did XOXO on Kickstarter, and wow, look, 47,000 already.
So what was Upcoming? Was it like
events?
It was a community events calendar. Yeah, yeah. It was a social events calendar.
I remember using it. I thought it was really great.
Yeah, And there's still not a great events solution for the web yet. So I mean, there's lanyards.
Is it like Evite kind of, or what is it?
I think it's more like a local band is playing next Friday. I'm going to submit this event. Which one of my friends are going? Less like Evite. I thought more of kind of like a community-based events calendar. I don't know. Matt, would you characterize it that way?
Or think about like Craigslist events, except with, you know, a modern UI and, you know, trying to keep all the spam out and that sort of stuff.
All right. Andy. That's that's the first time I can think of that happening, where you...
You got bought out. Yahoo, as usual,
just kind of screwed it to death into the ground.
Yeah, the big company shut you down. A few years pass.
He must have had the deal that he could compete by now or something like that, right? Because usually they have non-competes and all of that.
Yeah.
Well, because this was a while ago. It was almost 10 years ago.
That's awesome.
I remember there was some spam on Upcoming where someone was posting spam events that were like watch free online Super Bowl, whatever. So I dropped him a note and I was like, can you get rid of the spam? And he's like, no, I can't.
I don't own it anymore. Oh.
Yeah. So if he can pull that back and make it his again, that would be so cool.
Yay. Yeah, even Google wants you to bring back Upcoming.org.
30 grand in 90 minutes. Good for him.
Hey, look who's here. Heather Gold just walked in the door. Hi, Heather. How are you?
I want Andy to bring it back, too.
She says she wants Andy to bring it back, too.
Nothing is good, so.
Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get Heather to do Jeff's number or something. I don't know. She's in studio. Matt Cutts is here from the Google. Gina Trapani, founding editor of Life Hacker. And our show today brought to you by, and of course, thinkup.com, brought to you by Twit and 99designs.com. 99designs, the world's largest graphics design marketplace, is where we got our beautiful t-shirts designed, our Twit hoodies. In fact, what we did is we did a design contest. This is what you do. You say, I need a design. I need a logo. I need a landing page. I need a mobile app design. So you go to 99designs.com and you create a contest. There are more than did they cross 300,000 designers? I think they did. There are more than 300,000. That doesn't even sound possible. 300,000 designers there waiting to see your contest. And then, you know, they say, oh, yeah, I'd like to do that. And they give you some ideas. You can go back and forth. You pick a design, pick a designer. They get paid. You get a great logo starting at $199. We like the oh, they're so close. 299,762 designers. So close. We got so many great designs for our hoodie that we bought five of them, and we're going to make them all one by one. So, in fact, at teespring.com/twit, our second design is now available as a T-shirt, teespring.com/twit. 99designs is so cool. We've really been happy with it. Logo design starts at $299. T-shirts $199. And one of the best, there it is. There's the T-shirt. That was from a 99designs designer. It's beautiful. Isn't that great?
That is cool.
If you visit 99designs.com/twig, you'll get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. That gives you more designer time and attention. The 99designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in their marketplace. You'll get nearly twice as many designs. Designers love it. Customers love it. You'll love it. 99designs.com/twig. And we thank 99designs for their support of This Week in Google. They'll do custom typefaces. They'll do all sorts of stuff. You can give your logo a metallic glint or a colored shadow or any of 100 different design tricks. It's all done in the digital space. I love 99designs. 99designs, 99designs.com/twig. It is time for Gina Trapani and her tip of the week.
I've been playing around with Google Camera, the Google Camera app for Android, the lens blur feature, which you talked about a couple of episodes ago. And a photographer at guidingtech.com did actually a pretty good post about all the different ways he kind of experimenting with lens blur and a couple of good tips for getting lens blur to work most effectively. Something kind of obvious, you know, have a subject real close in the background, farther back, so you really get that depth of field. Centering your subject apparently helps a lot to get the effect that you want. And just tips on kind of raising, because you're moving your device in order to get the effect. So the subject centering I didn't know about. I often try to off-center because that's sometimes or a lot of times better composition, but right. It looks like lens blur looks a little bit better if you center. So a couple of good tips there.
How to use the lens blur.
I have to say, I like Google Camera's implementation a little bit better than the HTC
one. You don't use
one,
the HTC ones? I will do Jeff's number of the week. He says 2.5 million Chromebooks shipped last year, a 68% increase expected this year. And he also mentioned that Flux, look at that. He's such a Chromebook shill.
He is. He loves those Chromebooks.
He also mentions that Flux is a Google X project that just emerged from Google X and has received $8 million in funding to build eco-friendly buildings. Matt, you got something wonderful you'd like to pass along?
Yeah, absolutely. So since you already mentioned Webmaster Videos, you can search for Webmaster Videos and find all my stuff.
Best.
We've got 500 videos, but here's a little trick that I hadn't heard about, and if I hadn't heard about it, most people hadn't. There's, on the AdWords side, there's a similar group of people who film videos, and what they do is they take requests for questions on social media. So if you leave the hashtag AskAdWords on your tweet or your Google Plus post, I don't know if they can search Facebook or not, but basically just leave AskAdWords as a hashtag. And they film about once a week. They've been filming for about 6 months, and they typically answer 1 to 3 questions per video. So I haven't actually told them that I was going to mention this. So let's just flood them with good questions about AdWords, and they'll be like, what happened? This is crazy. So I think that would be kind of fun.
You should do this, Matt. Why don't you do this? Hashtag ask Matt.
We have done a couple sessions like that. It is a lot of fun to do. Yeah, I should do.
It can be a lot of work too. I mean, I say you should do it. Am I doing it? No.
I was gonna say I think that Matt probably has enough incoming queries on a regular basis.
You do mention this site, and this was really useful for us because we did get the warning from Chrome. This website contains malware. Our site was hacked almost a year ago. And you have a great website from the webmasters page, google.com/webmasters/hacked. What to do if you're a site owner and you see those very depressing, scary words.
We built this specifically as a multi-stage thing to take you through. Here's what to do. Don't be scared. You know, we can help you recover. And then at some point, if you need to ask for IT help, great. But this leads you through the basic procedures of recovering from getting yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we did all of that, including, you know, get our experts to go in there, find the exploit, find out how it got in to patch that hole, and then, of course, to get rid of it. And it's hard. I mean, once that happens, just like with a home computer, there's an unlimited number of bad things that could have been done to you. So you really have to scrub.
Yeah, sometimes it's better to nuke it from orbit just to be safe.
Yeah, well, that's what I tell people to do with their home installs. I'm not going to start my website from scratch. Let's just start all over again. Download Drupal, step one. Step two, pay $400,000. Step three, you have a site. God, that's expensive. We did not pay that much, thank goodness. That is Matt Cutts, my friends. We love the Matt. MattCutts.com/blog. Two T's. An M and an S, you provide the vowels. Anything else you want to plug? What's your 30-day challenge this month?
My 30-day challenge this month is to try to get good sleep. So I'm trying to get 8 hours of sleep a day.
Forget that.
Good for you. Actually, that's why you're so happy all the time.
What are you doing to get good sleep?
What am I doing? I'm just trying to get to bed a little bit earlier, and if I don't have to get up, I'll set the alarm a little bit later and that sort of stuff. So, and I went for a run this morning, and
that's good. That helps.
I actually went faster than I've gone ever before after a good night's sleep. So,
ladies and gentlemen, Rocky Part 8 featuring Matt Cutts as Rocky.
So can I tell you, Leo, So I ran the Boston Marathon 2 or 3 weeks ago.
You did? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Rock on. Did you finish?
I did, yeah.
My God.
It turns out, I can't qualify for speed. I'm very, very slow. But if you raise money for charity, then you are allowed to run in the Boston Marathon. They put you at the very back of the pack. And I have to tell you, every time I run a marathon, I start out the first hour and a half listening to Twig. Because I'm like, I don't want to start out too fast.
We can get you all the way home. We'll make them longer.
If you make it, I'll listen to it.
Four episodes
could get you the whole marathon.
Almost.
So great.
And again, I'm very slow. But I just wanted to say thanks because I saved that episode so that I could listen to it
Gina,
on the marathon.
Don't you feel good?
I do. First of all, that's amazing. All hail.
Yeah.
Coming from the person who can't walk half a mile.
Yeah.
Good job. Yeah. But also, that's so exciting. It's so cool that you're listening to us on the run. That's amazing.
I put the treadmill on a 10% grade, and I promptly fell off. It wasn't even going. So I'm not ready for the marathon. What is that, 26 miles? What is it?
26.2.
And you did it, and how long did it take you?
Oh, man, like 5 hours and 12 minutes. It takes me a long time.
Make a note of that, Jason. Our next twig will be 5 hours and 12 minutes.
Just the fact that you were in motion, I'd be double-fisting, you know, inhalers. I can't even.
That is so awesome.
Good for you.
Did you see Dens go running by from Dennis Crowley from Foursquare?
I didn't. He did pass me at some point, but I didn't see him go by.
No.
So.
Well, then he had to walk for the last few miles, so it's okay. Did you run it? I mean, like jog it the whole way?
So that's what I didn't realize is the Boston Marathon, there's crowds the whole way cheering for you.
You can't exactly rest.
No, I had a shirt that said, "Go, Matt, go." And so the whole crowd they'd shout, "Go, Matt, go," which turned out to be a blessing and a curse because, you know, the last 2 miles, you're like, I just want to run. And there's like a bunch of frat boys that are like, "Go, Matt, go."
Oh,
I'm like, okay, fine.
I just want to rest.
But it was really good. It was a phenomenal experience.
How did you train? Did you obviously you had to train for that, right?
So I'll do one quick plug. There's a website called usafit.com, and what they do is they have chapters around the country. So I'm with San Jose Fit, and over 6 months, they take you from 1 mile a week to 26 miles a week. And it's like $100 to join. You get discounts on marathons. It's all normal people. Anybody can run a marathon. All it takes is, 6 to 9 months of training. And so the season's actually starting now. Anybody who wants to run a marathon, I'd highly recommend that organization.
Really? You think I could do that?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I had never run more than 8 miles. I'd done beta breakers and nothing longer than that. And then I joined USA Fit and over the course of a season ran the San Francisco Marathon.
That's incredible. Well, I mean, what it takes is a commitment and a lot of time and stamina. And yeah, that's incredible. It's incredible.
And it's fine to go slow. If you finish a marathon in 6 hours and 29 minutes, you still finished, right? And anybody who hears that you run a marathon, they don't ask usually what your time is. They just say, oh, wow, that's great.
I only asked if you finished, and you finished.
Yeah, exactly. So
if you finish, you beat everyone who didn't.
Yeah, all the people on the couch.
All the people who didn't run.
I was in the bottom 10%, so I was very slow. But
I would
all
not,
those people on the couch.
I would not. If I ran a marathon, I don't care. I could be the literally 12 hours, the last guy crossing. I'd be happy.
Yeah, you still did it.
You mean donuts I could eat in 12 hours? I could eat a lot of donuts.
Matt's really mad. I just went to USA Fit. You're really tempting me here.
You should try it.
What was the charity that you raised money for?
The charity was the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Very good.
Which is a fantastic group of people.
They really do good cause. Yeah.
They had 700 runners at Boston, and they raised over $6 million.
Oh, isn't that great?
It was very cool.
And the vibe at the race was good. There were spectators the whole way.
Boston strong, baby.
It was incredible. I was ready to cry two or three times because the signs and the cheering.
Oh,
and,
my God.
What a good one to run.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Well,
right on.
Once again, Matt Cutts makes us all feel bad.
No, Matt always makes us feel good. No.
That's nice. Hey, that's so great to have you, Matt. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having us.
You're the best. Gina Trapani, smarterware.com. I don't know why I'm even mentioned that.
Don't go there.
There's nothing there. She has been busy doing something really, really exciting, which is ThinkUp.
I blog more actually at ThinkUp's blog, which is a blog.thinkup.com,
okay.
I think, these days.
Right.
Yeah.
You,
it was a lot of fun.
You could go there and thinkup.com and sign up. It's how much a year? $60?
Yeah, $5 a month, $60 a year. Mm-hmm.
And you could have your own insights like these. Look at, I boosted iTunes podcasting's tweet to 200,000 more people.
Generously.
One retweet. Well, actually, they were tweeting about our interview with Pomplamoose. So I guess.
Oh, excellent.
I guess it was what goes around comes around. And by the way, Matt Cutts, here is my tweet linking to that level 3 article.
Nice.
Oh, that got a nice response.
103 favorites, 40 replies, 102 retweets.
That's awesome.
Retweeting. They're retweeting. So it's fun to see this stuff. And it includes Facebook as well as Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great.
Instagram forthcoming.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, look, Recode followed me. I must be real.
Yeah.
I must be the real deal. Mm-hmm. So you too could have these great insights. If you use the F word, you get a really good one. ThinkUp.com. Thank you, Gina. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
We do this show every Wednesday afternoon, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC. If you want to watch live, I would love it if you did, because we have a live active chat room, and it really is great to get that feedback during the show. But if you can't watch live, never fear. You can record it. Well, actually, I'll tell you what. We'll record it for you. You can download audio or video, put it on your what did you use for a player, Matt, for your run?
Pocket Cast.
Pocket Cast on an Android device.
Which is a recommendation I also got from Twig.
Yeah, no, I love Pocket Cast.
Yeah, Pocket Cast is great.
Mm-hmm. So use Pocket Cast, download it, or Stitcher, or iTunes if you're on an iOS. I mean, there's plenty of places you can find it, but twit.tv/twig has a list of them too. You can always get the show there. We thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next Wednesday on Twig. Bye-bye.